Chapter 59. The Honorable Mrs. Skewton and her daughter, Mrs. Granger, resided, while at Leamington, in lodgings that were fashionable enough and dear enough, but rather limited in point of space and conveniences, so that the Honorable Mrs. Skewton, being in bed, had her feet in the window, and her head in the fireplace, while the Honorable Mrs. Skewton's maid was quartered in a closet within the drawing room, so extremely small, that, to avoid developing the whole of its accommodations, she was obliged to writhe in, and out of the door like a beautiful serpent. Withers, the one page, slipped out of the house immediately under the tiles at a neighboring milk shop, and the wheelchair, which was the stone of that young Sisyphus, passed the night in a shed belonging to the same dairy, where new-laid eggs were produced by the poultry connected with the establishment, who roosted on a broken donkey cart, persuaded, to all appearance, that it grew there, and was a species of tree. Mr. Dombey and the Major found Mrs. Skewton arranged, as Cleopatra, among the cushions of a sofa. Very airily dressed, and certainly not resembling Shakespeare's Cleopatra, whom age could not wither. On their way upstairs they had heard the sound of a harp, but it had ceased on their being announced, and Edith now stood beside it handsomer and haughtier than ever. It was a remarkable characteristic of this lady's beauty, that it appeared to vaunt and assert itself without her aid, and against her will. She knew that she was beautiful. It was impossible that it could be otherwise. But she seemed with her own pride to defy her very self. Whether she held cheap attractions, that could only call forth admiration, that was worthless to her, or whether she designed to render them more precious to admirers by this usage of them, those to whom they were precious seldom paused to consider. "I hope, Mrs. Granger," said Mr. Dombey, advancing a step towards her, "we are not the cause of your ceasing to play?"
"Why do you not go on then, my dearest Edith?"
said Cleopatra. "I left off as I began of my own fancy." The exquisite indifference of her manner in saying this. An indifference quite removed from dullness or insensibility, for it was pointed with proud purpose. Was well set off by the carelessness with which she drew her hand across the strings, and came from that part of the room. "Do you know, Mr. Dombey," said her languishing mother, playing with a hand screen, "that occasionally my dearest Edith and myself actually almost differ, not quite, sometimes, Mama?"
said Edith.
"Oh, never quite, my darling."
Fie, it would break my heart," returned her mother, making a faint attempt to pat her with the screen, which Edith made no movement to meet,
"about these old conventionalities of manner that are observed in little things? Why are we not more natural? Dear me! With all those yearnings, and gushings, and impulsive throbbings, that we have implanted in our souls, and which are so very charming, why are we not more natural?"
Mr. Dombey said it was very true, very true.
"We could be more natural, I suppose, if we tried?"
said Mrs. Skewton.
Mr. Dombey thought it possible.
"Devil a bit, ma'am," said the Major. "We couldn't afford it. Unless the world was peopled with J.B.S. Tough and Blunt Old Joes, ma'am, plain red herrings with hard rows, sir, we couldn't afford it. It wouldn't do."
"You naughty infidel," said Mrs. Skewton, "be mute."
"Cleopatra commands," returned the Major, kissing his hand, "and Anthony Backstock obeys."
"The man has no sensitiveness," said Mrs. Skewton, cruelly holding up the hand screen so as to shut the Major out. "No sympathy. And what do we live for but sympathy? What else is so extremely charming? Without that gleam of sunshine on our cold, cold earth," said Mrs. Skewton, arranging her lace tucker, and complacently observing the effect of her bare lean arm, looking upward from the wrist, "how could we possibly bear it? In short, obdurate man.
apostrophe glancing at the major, round the screen, I would have my world all hard, and faith is so excessively charming, that I won't allow you to disturb it, do you hear? Apostrophe apostrophe, the major replied, that it was hard in Cleopatra, to require the world to be all heart, and yet to appropriate to herself the hearts of all the world, which obliged Cleopatra to remind him that flattery was insupportable to her, and that if he had the boldness to address her in that strain any more, she would positively send him home. Withers the one, at this period, handing round the tea, Mr. Dombey again addressed himself to Edith. There is not much company here, it would seem. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, in his own portentous gentlemanly way. I believe not. We see none. Apostrophe, why really, apostrophe, observed Mrs. Skewton from her couch, there are no people here just now with whom we care to associate. Apostrophe, they have not enough heart, apostrophe, said Edith, with a smile. The very twilight of a smile. So singularly were its light and darkness blended. My dearest Edith rallies me, you see. Apostrophe apostrophe, said her mother, shaking her head, which shook a little of itself sometimes, as if the palsy bed now, and then in opposition to the diamonds. Wicked one. Apostrophe, you have been here before, if I am not mistaken? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, still to Edith. Oh, several times. I think we have been everywhere. Apostrophe, a beautiful country. Apostrophe apostrophe, I suppose it is. Everybody says so. Apostrophe, your cousin Phoenix raves about it, Edith, apostrophe, interposed her mother from her couch. The daughter slightly turned her graceful head, and raising her eyebrows by a hair's breadth, as if her cousin Phoenix were of all the mortal world the least to be regarded, turned her eyes again towards Mr. Dombey. I hope, for the credit of my good taste, that I am tired of the neighborhood, apostrophe, she said. You have almost reason to be, madam, apostrophe, he replied, glancing at a variety of landscape drawings, of which he had already recognized several as representing neighboring points of view, and which were strewn abundantly about the room, if these beautiful productions are from your hand. Apostrophe, she gave him no reply, but sat in a disdainful beauty, quite amazing. Have they that interest? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey. Are they yours? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, a new play, I already know. Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, and sing? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, she answered all these questions with a strange reluctance, and with that remarkable air of opposition to herself, already noticed as belonging to her beauty. Yet she was not embarrassed, but wholly self-possessed. Neither did she seem to wish to avoid the conversation, for she addressed her face, and so far as she could her manner also, to him, and continued to do so, when he was silent. You have many resources against weariness at least, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey. Whatever their efficiency may be, apostrophe, she returned, you know them all now. I have no more. May I hope to prove them all? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, with solemn gallantry, laying down a drawing he had held, and motioning towards the harp. Oh, certainly, if you desire it. Apostrophe apostrophe, she rose as she spoke, and crossing by her mother's couch, and directing a stately look towards her, which was instantaneous in its duration, but inclusive, if anyone had seen it, of a multitude of expressions, among which that of the twilight smile, without the smile itself, overshadowed all the rest, went out of the room. The major, who was quite forgiven by this time, had wheeled a little table up to Cleopatra, and was sitting down to play picket with her. Mr. Dombey, not knowing the game, sat down to watch them for his edification until Edith should return. We are going to have some music, Mr. Dombey, I hope? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Cleopatra. Mrs. Granger has been kind enough to promise so, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey. Ah, that's very nice. Do you propose, Major? apostrophe, no, ma'am, apostrophe said the major. Couldn't do it. Apostrophe, you're a barbarous being, apostrophe replied the lady, and my hand's destroyed. You are fond of music, Mr. Dombey? Apostrophe, eminently so, apostrophe was Mr. Dombey's answer. Yes. It's very nice, apostrophe said Cleopatra, looking at her cards. So much art in it, undeveloped recollections of a previous state of existence, and all that which is so truly charming. Do you know, apostrophe simpered Cleopatra, reversing the knave of clubs, who had come into her game with his heels uppermost, that if anything could tempt me to put a period to my life, it would be curiosity, to find out what it's all about, and what it means. There are so many provoking mysteries, really, that are hidden from us. Major, you two play. Apostrophe, the major played. And Mr. Dombey, looking on for his instruction, would soon have been in a state of dire confusion, but that he gave no attention to the game whatever, and sat wondering instead, when Edith would come back. She came at last, and sat down to her harp, and Mr. Dombey rose and stood beside her, listening. He had little taste for music, and no knowledge of the strain she played, but he saw her bending over it, and perhaps he heard among the sounding strings some distant music of his own, that tamed the monster of the iron road, and made it less inexorable. Cleopatra had a sharp eye, verily, at picket. It glistened like a bird's, and did not fix itself upon the game, but pierced the room from end to end, and gleamed on harp, performer, listener, everything. When the haughty beauty had concluded, she arose, and receiving Mr. Dombey's thanks and compliments in exactly the same manner as before, went with scarcely any pause to the piano, and began there. Edith Granger, any song but that? Edith Granger, you are very handsome, and your touch upon the keys is brilliant, and your voice is deep and rich. But not the air that his neglected daughter sang to his dead son? Alas, he knows it not. And if he did, what air of hers would stir him, rigid man? Sleep, lonely Florence, sleep. Peace in thy dreams, although the night has turned dark, and the clouds are gathering, and threaten to discharge themselves in hail. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.